to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, Brains, and welcome back to The Edge. You are in for another fantastic interview with our guest, Stephanie Ashman Spires. She is the Fayette County School Board District Chair. That's a big responsibility. But not only has she done that, she's embraced the children in her community and their needs in a very personal kind of way, an intimate kind of way, bringing them into her home and being a foster parent. I want to see what that looks like. I want to talk to her about what the texture of the schools are like there in Fayette County, Kentucky, of all places. We're going to talk a little bit about bourbon and horses, the Kentucky Derby, but we're also going to talk about fostering, mentoring, loving, and caring, and what these children need when it comes to education because, you know, they're moved around a lot. So, Brains, help me welcome to The Edge, Stephanie Ashman Spires. How are you, Stephanie?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on your show, April.
Absolutely. We need you on the edge. There's a lot of kids out there that are in the foster care system. I know I have two aunts that between the two of them have supported and raised over 75 foster youth in Ohio. So I've done several shows on that, and I know that that is really a hot ticket item. And so you're going to help us color in some of the white spaces and tell us why you not only decide to work with this population of at-risk youth, but also bring them into your home and adopt them. So tell us a little bit about your story.
So I began foster parenting about 8 years ago. And at the time, my husband and I, we were just young professionals, and we thought this was a great way that we could kind of give back to the community. We never got into it with the intention to adopt, and we only thought we'd probably do it for a couple of years. So here we are 8 years later. We have adopted three girls. I also have a senior that lives with me that is going off to college in the fall. So I have four daughters. And that's how we got here. And we've had over 40 kids come through our home, ranging from newborn to 21 years of age. Some of our kids are now having kids themselves. Some have gone through school. And so you never quite know what you're going to get around here on any given day.
Well, you have a very powerful and compelling interview that I've run a few times on my Facebook page about your story and your journey of how you got your first foster child. Well, your second, because you were in the process
second.
Of adoption, and then up pops another gift. Tell us about that.
So it was really interesting. I ran for city council and lost back in 2012. And during the time we were going through the process, what kind of changed us from fostering to adoption is that the goal for the child living in our house was changed to adoption, and we thought it over and decided that we wanted to adopt her, but then we also wanted to go ahead and adopt another child because we felt like it was very hard for her to go from siblings to no siblings and make that transition. All my kids do beautifully with foster kids, and they really understand that transition, but just going from no kids would be kind of a weird change. So I lost the city council race, and for the first time in really a year, because I had been out on the campaign trail and I'd been active in the community, I really had nothing to do. I was sitting at a McDonald's drive-thru line, and I was thinking about going to a movie by myself when I got a call asking if I would be interested in fostering this little girl, that more than likely the goal would be adoption. And I said yes, and I drove from McDonald's to the store to pick up a car seat, to the fire department to get the car seat installed, to the hospital to pick up the baby, and then I went
wow.
by the preschool and picked up our 2.5-year-old.
You didn't call your husband, did you?
I did call my husband that time. We do have an agreement. We have an agreement. So I did call him in the McDonald's drive-thru line, and he said, yeah, like, what else are we going to do? And so it was really sweet, though, that night when he got home, my 2.5-year-old said, Daddy, we got a baby, like thinking that we were surprising him. And he said, oh, I've heard. But then what was really interesting about that case is 2 weeks later, two of our teens came back into care. So we went from a house that just had a 2.5-year-old to a house that had a 2.5-year-old, a newborn, and two twin 13-year-old boys. In the span of 2 weeks. And so that was a very interesting time in our foster care journey.
You know, bringing in children into your home is such, it's so intimate. It's your space. They come with their own personal set of challenges. They have to learn to adjust. They have to incorporate your lifestyle. Sometimes there's cultural differences. There's ethnic differences, there's age differences. How do you, as a foster parent, really kind of navigate that and make them feel warm and comfortable and inviting when they first enter your home? How do you do that?
Well, for me, I have very few rules when a kid first comes in. And it's really interesting. A lot of the kids that come to our home have been in multiple placements. I have one child that has been in 43 placements. I had one child that has been in double digits, but she can't even name them all. And the first question out of a lot of these kids is what are the rules? And I'm just very honest that the rules in this house are that we respect one another and we love one another. And as I get to know the child and as I get to know, then we definitely set boundaries. Boundaries are so important in understanding and self-awareness. But rather than overload them with a policies and procedural manual on the first day that they're in our home, you know, I just kind of want to get to know them. And I break it down and I do baby steps. I had a 17-month-old once who didn't know how to smile. And so I made it my mission those first couple of days, I'm going to figure out how to get. And it took whipped cream on a waffle to do it, but I got that smile out of him. And that was what I focused on in those first few days. I take them out and help them get some things to decorate their rooms. I really want to involve their parents, especially reunification is the goal. And I recognize that almost every child I have fostered, their parent was a foster child. And I think that's a powerful thing that people have to remember, is that the kids we are fostering come from a family. This is a cycle in their family. And their parents did not have anyone advocating for them necessarily and are just repeating the cycle. And so I usually meet the birth family, and this is in the first couple days. I always ask for pictures of the family to decorate the child's room with and items that are important to them, so that we can continue to establish that relationship and that they're aware that this is my mom and this is my family. And then that kind of breaks down that barrier too, because the parents realize, okay, she wants to work with us. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of inviting birth families to medical appointments and to inviting them to school activities and really engaging, because if they're going to be successful in reunification, they need to know how to do these things and how to advocate for their own children. So inviting them to the ARC meetings and the IEP meetings at the schools. It's funny too, so many kids that are no longer in my house, I still go to their ARC meetings and their IEP meetings, because now that they've been reunified, the family is still looking for that support, and we continue to give that. So that's kind of what those first few days look like. But they're usually chaotic. And I always tell people too, my criteria for accepting a child is I'm very bad about thinking about long term. I never think, am I going to raise this child and have to put them through college? I think about the next 48 hours and what we have going on. And would it be good for a child to come in during this time? You know, if we have a lot of chaotic stuff going on, this is not the time to bring a child in. If the next 48 hours we can mold a child in with us, we'll do it.
Well, education. Education is paramount. These children are moved around and shuffled a lot. First of all, let me commend you for being so open to welcome in the parents to help them adjust and get whatever situation is together that caused this, you know, this breakup to begin with, and to help them to reunify as a family, and you be the facilitator of that. I commend you, because a lot of times you know, these parents really have some issues and some baggage, and the state has come in, they've removed the child from the home, they've put them there. I know that the foster parents have to deal with them, but sometimes that can be a real challenge. So the more flexible that you are with the child and the parent, I think that that really creates a successful turnkey approach, and I want to commend you for that. I want to talk a little bit about their education. Are you an educator by trade? Are you a teacher or former teacher?
No, I have a my undergrad degree is in education from the University of Kentucky, and then I also have a master's in educational policy from the University of Kentucky. I have taught preschool and I have taught college classes, but I've never taught in the K through 12 classroom. But it's funny, when I was a child and people asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I always said I wanted to work with kids, but I didn't want to be a teacher. But I didn't know what that looked like, because when you're little, you just think a teacher, a nurse, a veterinarian, you know, kind of the basic. And I feel blessed because I feel like I'm absolutely doing what I always wanted to do, working with kids. I just am not in the classroom. And I tell people all the time, we have our skills and we have our gifts, and my gift is not a kindergarten teacher. I can be a foster parent, but I can't be a pediatrician or a kindergarten teacher.
As I say, you got to get in where you fit in, right? And so you fit right in there. I was just kind of asking that because it was just interesting that you would choose to run for the school board, and to be such a strong voice for these for this population of at-risk youth. You know, you're really a superhero, too. And there are a lot of famous foster children that are that were, you know, orphans. I mean, just think, Superman, Aquaman, John Lennon, Marilyn Monroe, James Dean, Louis Armstrong, Eddie Murphy. All of these people are hugely successful, and they have had to transition and go through foster care. What would be some of the suggestions for success that you would offer to other foster parents about fostering and really helping these children get to a successful place?
Well, when you're working with the teens especially, you have to set boundaries, but you have to give them freedom. So, for example, I have a young lady, you know, my senior, before she lived with me, she was never allowed to go spend the night at other kids' houses. She was never allowed to just go out and meet up with friends. And a lot of that is the old way with foster parenting. That actually used to be, there were some laws that really prohibited kids from being able to go to out-of-state sports camps or to the Washington, D.C. trips. Anything that was overnight was really difficult for these kids. But the laws have changed, and so we need to change with that, our thoughts as foster parents. And we need to work to get these kids this boundary, because the last thing you want to do is send a kid out at 18 who has never had a sleepover or never had to plan going to movies with a friend or never had to plan a dinner date and just send them out into the wild without any of those life skills. And so it's so important to really break down those life skills and give them that real life experience and let them just be kids. Let them go to football games. Encourage them to get involved with track or an after-school activity. And foster, you know, it's never too late. If they never got to take that dance class as little kids, let them take that dance class. Like, work with them to give them those skills to kind of transition them.
Yeah, I know. My aunts are great at that. They put them in the Pop Warner football. They buy them bikes. They really treat them as a member of the family. But, again, I wouldn't last a minute because I get so emotionally attached. And so you gave a great piece of advice that, you know, I'm not thinking long term of this person living here with me forever. I'm just thinking about the day to day. But then there's a certain connection and there's a certain love that you must have for each child that has landed on your doorstep. How do you manage that emotionally? And do you still stay connected with those children after they leave?
Almost every child we have fostered or that has been through our house, we still have a connection with. And I really attribute that to being open and having that relationship with those foster or with those biological parents. Because if the child's reunified and you supported them during the time and you allowed them access when you had the child, it built that trust, they're going to continue to use you as a resource when the child's reunified. And they're going to continue. And sometimes I've had parents come to me before they get to that crisis point, where before maybe they couldn't have paid their rent and they would have been homeless. They can call me. We can connect them with services. We can get them supports. We can get that rent paid, and we can avoid having a family out in the street and having a child removed again, or a situation like that. So I think that is one of the reasons. I definitely have a strong bond and a different bond with all my children. And I tell people I have Leanne Toohey moments. I don't know if you saw The Blind Side, where sometimes kids tell you things.
Right.
And you just have to walk out of the room. Like, you have to keep a straight face and act like it doesn't affect you, and then go lock yourself in the bathroom and cry for a few minutes, and then pull yourself together and come back out. The other thing, too, I think all parents will tell you, whether it's a foster kid or a biological kid, you're going to get all the information in the car. In the car is where these kids start telling
right.
you about their abuse and their trauma history. You might drive by a building that they lived at or that they were beaten at as a kid, and it triggers something. And so that's the hardest part, is you're sitting here driving, you're trying to listen and engage, and you just, you know, want to go run off and cry for a minute. So that is the hardest piece, is having that composure and remaining calm. But if anything, foster parenting has taught me how to be patient and how to be calm. And those are two skills I definitely did not have 8 years ago. But it took almost 6 years for our first daughter's adoption to be finalized. And so that really taught me a lot about patience, is getting that through the court system and getting that through that there's nothing. After that, nothing seems very complicated. And so I have much more patience than I used to have.
There's a lot of risk versus reward. I mean, people fail to realize you're not just getting a kid. Sometimes you're getting a kid, like you said, that has been severely beaten, traumatized, nightmares, medical conditions, eating disorders, anger issues. All of these things you're going to have to work through, and, you know, in your home, and deal with that. So there is a lot of risk involved, but the reward is so great when you look out and you see this child, you know, flourishing and making friends and smiling and going to that first dance and, you know, coming back and being a full person. And I really know that that's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of spirit, and it takes a lot of God. And it may take a lot of Kentucky bourbon. Let me talk to you about that, because when we first met, it was Derby time, and I told you that's one of the things that have always been on my life list, is to come down there, down to Kentucky. I had another guest that was just down there, and she told me what a wonderful time she had. So tell me a little bit about the culture in Kentucky and their favorite libation, bourbon.
Yes, so Kentucky is a little confused. Part of the state is southern, part of the state is more midwestern, and then Louisville is just kind of Louisville. They don't really want to be affiliated with the rest of us. Sometimes we joke, but you know, the big things we do in Kentucky is we breed horses, and we drink bourbon, and we create bourbon. I guess we have to create it to drink it. And so, yes, bourbon and horses are our two vices and our two agricultural sources of income around here. And, you know, and the food is great. Kentucky is a great place. It's a place where neighbors still want to help neighbors. I heard someone yesterday say, you know, if I have cucumbers and you have tomatoes, Kentucky is the kind of place where we trade off and we make sure that our neighbors are taken care of, regardless of our income, regardless of what our families are facing. You know, neighbors help neighbors. And it is just a fun place. And, you know, in Lexington, where I live, we have two racing meets. We race in April for 3 weeks, and we race in October for 3 weeks. And really, this town comes alive during the time between April and October. And we have lots of festivals, and there's several bourbon festivals in the state. We have a bourbon chase where it's a race where you have teams and you run to all the different distilleries. We have a bourbon trail where, just like a passport, that you can come in and you can check off all the distilleries and drive across the state and visit all the distilleries. And, you know, it's just really, it's fun. And bourbon is good. I mean, we all have grown
well,
up
let me
with
ask
it,
you a
so
little bit about bourbon,
it.
Because I was a brand ambassador and I've done fine scotches and vodkas, and but I've never done a bourbon. What is a bourbon? Is it what are some of the notes? Are they is it smoky? Is it distilled in a oak or a cherry barrel? What is it about bourbon that makes it unique? And also, do you drink it straight or are you supposed to mix it?
Well, the locals drink it straight. We might put like one ice cube in it, but it's okay to mix it. Some people mix it with like Ale 8, which is another Kentucky soda that people like to put in it, or ginger ale of some type. Sometimes a Diet Coke might be good. Cokes are kind of hard because they've got a lot of sugar, and bourbon has some sugar, and it's kind of too sugary if you do that. So a diet drink is okay. Ice water is okay. But you can tell who are the Kentuckians and who are the hard core.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually up in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago, and I was drinking Blanton straight from the barrel, which is very strong, and I was drinking it straight up, and a couple of the gentlemen at the bar were just very taken back, and then I said, oh, I'm from Kentucky, and they said, oh, well, that makes sense. Like, you know, we've
they
never
seen
a
girl just drink bourbon
right? like that. Yeah, right? So,
now let me ask you about... go ahead.
Go on.
I wanted
to
ask you a little bit about the horses there. You know, here in San Diego, we have the beautiful Del Mar horse races, and then across the street from there in Rancho Santa Fe, there's a polo match. But there's been a lot of brouhaha about stopping racing and all of the damage and pain that it causes the horses and how many horses have been taken down. Do you kind of have those conversations there? Are they thinking about reducing the amount of horse racing or not?
Well, I think one thing that's interesting that has really come out of the Derby and the Derby controversy is that the realization that there is not unified rules in horse racing. The rules vary state to state. So, for example, I think that the Derby got it right based on the rules in Kentucky and how it was overturned and how that played out. However, if this race had been held in some other states, it would not have been overturned. And so there's not consistency in the care for the horses and the track conditions, in the way trainers are. I mean, there's just really not consistency across the board. And so that is one thing that I hope kind of comes out of this, is let's look at this. You know, they are starting to stop the meds that they were giving some of the horses, and they are looking at the tracks. And so, but also, you know, one thing I think that here in Lexington we take a lot of pride in is we really take care of our horse family, everyone that's involved in our horses. I actually spent some time out last week at the track, and I went to a farm. I actually saw a couple of horses actively being bred last week. And yes, and so, but
you said they were being bred, so he was doing it. I've seen horses do it before, and oh my God!
And it's a whole different beast when you're getting paid $50,000 or $250,000 for that 3 minutes of action. So it's an interesting thing, but. You know, here in Kentucky, we really, at Keeneland especially, which is the horse track here in Lexington, we, on the backside, we provide housing, we provide health insurance, we provide some accidental insurance, they provide church services, and really a support system, because so many of the workers involved in the horse industry are not from the United States, and they don't, they're sending money back to their families, and they don't have that support system, and they move from track to track to track as the seasons go. And so we really want to make sure that their time here, that they're well taken care of, and that they understand that we really value them and what they bring to our community. So much of our economic development depends on our horse breeding and our horse sales and our horse racing. You know, those 3 weeks in April and those 3 weeks in October, you can't get a hotel room in this city, and you can't You have to have reservations in most restaurants, and it's just a really fun place to be. And we recognize that that is all because of these horses and those that work with them, the trainers and the jockeys and the track side workers and everyone who is out there taking care of this on the front lines every day.
Well, you have definitely jockeyed for a position, and you are the winner of the Triple Crown in my heart, because you've done so many things for foster kids, for the community, for the horse community, and you educated us on bourbon. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Stephanie, if they want any information on anything that you have to offer us.
Yeah, so you can find me, Stephanie Ashman Snyder. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can, and all those ways have ways to reach me directly. I try to be really accessible. If you go to the Fayette County Public Schools website, there's my phone number and my email, and you can contact me through those means. I really try to sit down with people. I'm about person-to-person contact. I want to hear from constituents. I want to collaborate with other individuals and other organizations, and I really feel like, you know, we can all learn from each other, and we can continue to grow and support each other. So those are the best ways to get a hold of me.
Yep, and you know what? Fostering is a global concern. There's foster children being taken away from their parents at the borders. We haven't even talked about that. That's a whole other story. But there's a whole lot of stuff going on, and these kids need their help. And if there's wonderful people like Stephanie and her husband that open their arms, their homes, I really, really commend you, and you're loving on them at the same time. And plus, there's a return on your investment because you're feeling good about what you're doing. Brains, I need you to feel good about what you're doing. Reach out and help somebody, anybody, homeless person, sick person, your neighbor, carrying their groceries. Show some love today, okay? Because that's what we do here on The Edge. That's why I come and I talk to you from all over the planet. Go back, check me out, other edgy conversations, everything, Bitcoin, love, relationship, murder, gangs, and some comedy, all here for you on The Edge. Thank you so much for coming. Here's Stephanie. My brains love you, and if you ever want to come back, but next time, bring some bourbon.
All right, sounds good.
All right, brains, have a good day.
Thank you.